Hello and welcome to Little African News. My name is Mona Davids and I am the founder of Little African News and New York Voice, as well as On the Spot with Mona Davids. Today we're having our Meet the Candidate and we are interviewing Ismael Malave Perez, who is running for New York City Comptroller. So I want to jump into this because this is a very, very important race. This is a role that is critical to a functioning, highly efficient city government. So Ismael, please introduce yourself. Thank you so much for joining me here at Little African News. And, you know, tell our viewers and our listeners and our readers about yourself.
Thank you so much for having me, Mona. For me, it's really an honor and a pleasure to be here as it relates to the African diaspora. It's a community that I am hold dear to my heart. I was raised in the Bronx, New York, and which is one of the first places that a lot of Africans come from when they come from all over the world. And when I worked at Lehman College, I was responsible for managing a unit that hired all of the F1 visa students. So I have friends from almost every country in Africa, from Kenya, from Ghana, from Senegal, from Mali, from, you know, you name it. I don't know. I actually helped about 41 students acclimate into the United States as someone who not only became their boss, but became their friends. So hopefully one of these days, I'll be able to travel the world when I go back to visit them. I was raised in the Bronx, but I was born in Puerto Rico. And we came here. I was raised by a single mom. And we went from being, you know, a Bronx residents to being homeless and living in a Q Motor Inn as a homeless shelter. And so I know firsthand, and I could relate to what it means to come to this country, have to struggle, have to deal with migrant issues. My mom had a language barrier and she had to learn English, and her children, my brother and my sister, had to like help her, right? We were her translators. We see this happening a lot with African families, even though we know that in Africa, a lot of people speak English. So you have that one going for a lot of African countries. But we made it in New York City, the greatest city in America. And we went from the Q Motor Inn to coming back to the Bronx and living in three different buildings. Here I am in Morris Park, my own home. I went from the Bronx through three boroughs just to get to high school. So I became an auto mechanic. I went to Brooklyn Automotive. Fast forward, when I went to Lehman College, because my teachers told me you should go to college. Don't just concentrate on being a mechanic. You have a lot going for you. You're a bright guy. So I went from being a student leader at high school to becoming a student leader at Lehman College, got intricately involved in the campus community and got offered a job. I didn't make it to the dean's list or the president's Rolodex. The president's honor roll, but I made it to their Rolodexes. And so they offered me a job and I took on the job for 2 years. Then I started volunteering in different campaigns. I helped individuals run for citywide office. I helped individuals run for the assembly, like my good friend Michael Benjamin that you just recently had on your show. Fernando Ferrer, who I hope will come on as somebody who's going to be endorsing me, hopefully, and I'm praying on it, and others. I have made it to the ballot. So from the Bronx to the ballot, and highly qualified, having worked for five comptrollers, I worked for Carl McCall, Alan Hevesy, Tom DiNapoli, Bill Thompson, and John Liu. I helped individuals run for borough president, assembly, senate, council, U.S. Senate, vice president, and president. So highly involved in strategic planning in political operations. In fact, I've been labeled as a political operative. It just is a fancy way of saying somebody who's truly connected, mm-hmm. both politically and in the community. Because the person that's called a political operative is somebody who helps the elected officials kind of solve problems, right? And that's what I've been all my life, a problem solver. I mean, things weren't always easy, but I did say we were dirt poor. And I went from, at one point, receiving government subsidies to working for five individuals that signed and sealed all the checks issued by the state and the city of New York. And hopefully on June 14th, when early voting begins, and on primary day, I'm going to become the next person that signs all the checks issued by the city of New York. And that's going to be an amazing opportunity for all New Yorkers to elect one of your own, a homegrown New Yorker, somebody who grew up here and understands the value of the dollar, that understands what it means to take the train, that understands what it means to struggle to make ends meet, that understands what it means, or even understands the feeling of having to ask somebody to support you by sending you an extension cord so you could power your refrigerator because your mom couldn't make ends meet. So here we are, somebody that's connected, because they say, and it's true, right? You put God first, and we're all God's children. The blood that unites us is thicker than the water or the land that divides us. And so I am one of you. I am part of the African diaspora, because Puerto Ricans, we are from the Caribbean, and we have African descent in us. We're all one. And I'm so happy that New York has a chance to elect somebody who's highly qualified, right? So not only did I work for these individuals, but over the years, 27 years in total as a public servant, so varying roles at very high levels and different capacities, and having worked for five controllers, that's 16 years under five controllers, I understand how the money works. As the controller, it's the second most powerful position, but I would say it's the most powerful and most important position in city government. It's the fiscal watchdog, or the chief officer, the chief financial officer. As controller, I will be overseeing and managing the $283 billion pension systems that's made up of five systems. And that's the fire, the police, the teachers, the Board of Education employees, and the New York City employees. Those are the five systems. And collectively, I understand how it works. Why? Under the John Liu administration, I actually managed a sizable portion of the real estate portfolio's investments. And it was very close to 35 partnerships, like $2 billion in assets that I conducted financial investment analysis on a small piece of the portfolio. At the time, the portfolio was valued at about $10 billion. And I reported to the person in-house that was responsible for managing it, along with the money managers outside, the consultants, and all the placements that we had throughout the country. It's a dynamic system, and it really is so important, so vital to the individuals that are going to be depending on it in retirement. It's not safe to say that you're going to put somebody into an office that's talking about divesting from fossil fuels without conducting an analysis, talking about selling Tesla without doing a stock analysis at a point where we bought it at this level, 400, and they're talking about selling it when it's at 200 a share. I think that some of the people running for office are pandering to the voters, but they don't realize that the voters are smarter than that. And when my story gets out and they realize that they have a real choice, a real individual, somebody that's not a politician, that is going to go in there with experience over politics, and it's going to bring common sense back into the controller's office, because that's what it needs. It needs an individual that's going to bring a team, a dynamic team, to help me as the controller, as the leader of the office, and helping and doing it on behalf of the taxpayers, managing the money on behalf of the taxpayers, make sure that we make common sense decisions. So the controller's office is so dynamic that it also oversees the city's debt, which is about $95 billion. It oversees and directs recommendations and analysis on the New York City budget, which is about $115 billion. And it conducts audits across the city to eliminate waste, fraud, or corruption. And I'm going to utilize the power of the audit unlike ever before, because I understand how it works. And I've been somebody that's been on audit teams. And I've been audited myself. And so I've experienced it firsthand, and I know how to do it. So day one, I'm going to try to make sure that I beef up. I'm going to make sure that I beef up the audit unit. I'm going to hire more staff analysts, because the city controller's office has lost a lot of its workforce. And how could you conduct citywide audits, at least accurately conduct citywide audits, when you're understaffed, right? So the staff needs to be beefed up in the controller's office. And I have a great team. I have advisors. I have a former deputy comptroller that did contracts and procurement. I have a former first deputy comptroller who is one of my senior advisors on my team. I also have individuals that worked in the controller's office. I have people who have donated to me because they know how great I was as a colleague of theirs, who currently work in the controller's office. So my campaign has been built on grassroots. I've raised over $95,000 from small donations from individuals across the city. Those are solid votes. And I got onto the ballot because I came in with over 19,400 signatures. That's like unheard of. So outspent by my opponents, I'm sure they both spent well over $200,000. And I got onto the ballot with under $65,000. So we're making history together. I hope that the voters and your listeners are kind of like made aware that they have a choice. They have somebody that's from the Caribbean who's running for controller of the city of New York, the greatest city, the city that gave me a chance to make it. Somebody who went from being a mechanic to working for five controllers. I also worked at the public advocate's office at one point, and I currently work for the city. I work at the office called DCAS, the Department of Citywide Administrative Services. And this particular office is responsible for providing support to all of the agencies across the city. So I have contacts in every agency, and operationally speaking, I work in the logistics unit. I work in a unit that monitors and conducts all of the auctions for the city.
Wow. So,
yeah, I'm a moneymaker for the city. The unit that I work with, for instance, a tidbit, we sold the Staten Island Ferry to Pete Davidson. Not sure if he's going to do anything with it, but, you know, good luck to him on that. He does have a historical Staten Island that he owns, and I process all of the city's scrap metal. So I make money from the byproduct of our operations, where we process the metal that, you know, from the operations, and we make money from vendors that collect it for us. On top of that, any underutilized inventory or its useful life is over, we sell it to the public, and it becomes cyclical. So rather than sending it to the dump, we identify an end use for it somehow. We partner up, people buy, and they can resell it or use it for their own purposes, chairs, tables, etc. That's why I'm going to be the best controller, because I know how to make things work. I know how to find the best value in everything. For instance, I saved the city millions of dollars. I served as an expert witness in a lawsuit, and I utilized and applied my knowledge in the controller's office and in inventory management to dismiss their expert witness's claim for like a $6 million claim. And although the city was found liable, we came at zero cost. So basically I dismissed their claim, and the city was found liable, but because of my expert input, they didn't win anything. There was no monetary claim on their part. So we actually won the lawsuit, and it was dismissed in that fashion. Here I am, somebody that also is implemented a citywide maintenance management system with a great team of folks at DCAS. So I understand IT platforms, and one of the things that I'm going to do when I become the controller is implement a transparency portal to support all of the agencies across the city so people know in real time how the money is being managed, how the money is being spent. And that's something that's going to be first of its kind, okay? I know that the controller's office has the checkbook.
Mm-hmm.
Checkbook needs to be updated, and I'm going to become that person that's going to update it. On top of that, and for all of the folks that are listening, I'm going to institute a financial literacy program where all New Yorkers are going to learn how to manage money. I'm not sure if you hear the feedback, but there's like a really loud noise.
Yeah, it comes and it goes, but it's gone now. So
I think it's on your end. If there's a fan or something, maybe. But it's okay. I think that means I'm talking too much, and maybe when you speak, it goes away. And I felt like I was trying to speak over it. I'm sorry. I hope I didn't sound like I was yelling, but
not at all.
To put it in a nutshell, the controller's office is the most important position in city government, because it's the position that manages the city's finances and defends the taxpayer dollar. And as controller, I'm going to make sure that I safeguard taxpayer dollars. I'm going to make sure that the bond and the bond program in the city is managed well. I'm going to make sure that the city's Bureau of Asset Management is best in class and the pension systems are performing at par. Okay. I'm going to make sure that we protect it and check to see and check, put some checks and balances where what happens at Wall Street does not affect the taxpayer funded program, the city's pension systems. Because if it underperforms, the taxpayers need to put in for the difference. People aren't talking about that. They're talking about, oh, we're going to use it for affordable housing programs. You can't say that. I'm all for affordable housing programs, by the way. But you can't say that you're going to use other people's money to build affordable housing programs without explaining how it's going to make money for the pension systems, right? Okay. So it has to be a real deal analysis that if we build this affordable housing platform, this affordable housing program, the pension system is going to earn this much money from it. They aren't spelling that out, right? So they're talking about divesting from fossil fuels. Why would you do that? You're giving up our seat at the table. So now we can't even like defend ourselves if the people, if they want to jack up the price for fossil fuels, the end user is going to get squeezed and we have no place at the table. So you want to sell Tesla. So by saying that by saying you're going to dump Tesla, what if we get sued because people who are running for the office want to say that, oh, and my understanding is that the current controller is trying to sue Tesla. But what if we get sued, right? Because, or we get countersued because now we're using it as a political football and it may be perceived by folks in the financial world as, hey, here we have one of the highest profile financial offices that owns billions of dollars worth of Tesla saying that it's not worth it. It's not worthy. Let's dump it. So now it drives down the price. So now they're the ones making it look like it's a bad stock to own. People don't understand how financial markets work, right? And I mean, the controller's office is key. The leader in that office needs to be somebody that understands that you have a CIO, the chief investment officer, that you work with, who works with all the boards, who understands how to manage the money. So one of my consiglieres was somebody who's an advisor, somebody who's helping me out, who's somebody who I lean on, is a individual that understands it, right? Somebody who says, Ismail, you they're saying stuff that doesn't make sense. It's not a good look. And so I'm like, I completely agree. I call on to advisors, you know, because one thing I learned when I was growing up, if you don't take advice, you're never going to grow to be wise, right? So growing up as a kid, I always took a lot of advice from my mother and individuals around me. And I'm so honored to have individuals that have been in those offices and in those units from five different controllers across my governmental career that are proud of me. And although they haven't stuck their neck out, because I'm the one doing it, I'm the one running, so I'm the one sticking my neck out, right? Because of, you know, obvious reasons. People lose their jobs for sticking their neck out. When people endorse you, they say, you know, I'm with you. What happens if, you know, I don't turn out to be the person with the most votes? Now, all of a sudden, whoever comes in may retaliate, right? It happens everywhere. And it happens in offices. It happens in politics. So I'm a person that understands that. And I appreciate the people that I've worked with over the years. And at the end of the day, I don't have to worry about that, because you can have all the union endorsements under the sun, all the political endorsements under the sun, and still lose. So we've seen it happen in the last presidential election, right? The candidate running for the Democratic Party had all of the endorsements under the sun, you know, had all of the unions under the sun, lost because the voters are the ones that make the decision. I'm counting on New York voters to come out on primary day to do their early voting, to do a mail absentee, to come out on June 14th and hit the switch or hit the level, pull the bubble for me. But Ismael Malave Perez, the best qualified candidate, having worked for five controllers and somebody who understands how the office works. It's common sense. It's just, I was told, in fact, by a very high profile union leader, it's sad that in New York, the best qualified candidates don't always win. In fact, he told me that 9 out of 10, the best qualified candidates don't always win. And he said, but I'm going to leave that one in there, and hopefully you'll be the one that gets in. And I said, thank you. I'll take it. You know, I appreciate that. But then he told me why. And he told me why the best qualified candidates don't always win. And he said, because the voters never hear about it. So this is why I'm so honored to be on your platform, and that your listeners who are voters or have family members that can vote can tell their neighbors, their friends, that there's a highly qualified candidate running for New York City Comptroller, and that they have an option to select, you know, someone experienced over politics, right? So, you know, I don't want to talk bad about my opponents. I mean, one of the only other candidates that actually worked in the comptroller's office is one of my former colleagues, is a senator. So the media is not covering any of the folks that are running for this office except the elected officials. They just conducted a poll recently about the comptroller's office, and they left my name out. That's the facts. I'm not bashing them, and shame on, you know, whoever it was that told this person to probably leave my name out, unless it was like a oversight, which I think it was an innocent oversight, right? But if somebody did say, leave this guy out of it, shame on you, because the poll showed me something that I loved, that 60% of New York City voters don't know who else is running and are undecided. Thank you for informing me that 60% of the voters are up for grabs. Mm-hmm. And so now when they find out that I am running, that 60% of those voters are going to probably gravitate to the most qualified candidate. And this is part of the reason probably, well, I would say that this is mainly the reason why the mainstream media hasn't responded to my inquiry about, hey, I thought it was all about fair time, equal time, right? I reached out to individuals. Over the last year, because I announced that I was running since February of 2024, February 1 of 2024. They continue to invite individuals to New York One, to other news outlets, to cover them in stories on NBC, ABC. I've reached out to individuals that have programs like Joe Torres, El Diario, to write something about me, to cover my story. And to be fair to them, I think that they didn't think that I could get this far. So because I haven't qualified for matching funds, right, they haven't covered me. But everything is not about money. I am learning more and more that the people in New York City really want to hear and feel and understand what the controller's office is all about. And they want to hire and they want to elect individuals like me that care, that want to give back, they want to do something positive, they want to lead by example, right? So here I am as a kid that grew up by or was raised by a single mom, and I'm leading by example. I'm the father I never had to two wonderful boys. I'm a husband, I'm a working family man, homeowner in New York City, a product of the system, right? Literally, publicly educated. I have an MBA from like CUNY's Harvard, the Zicklin School of Business at Baruch CUNY, right? Mm-hmm. And I have, besides having an MBA from Baruch College, I have an economics degree from Lehman College, which is a wonderful, wonderful university. My alma mater, Lehman. I love everybody at CUNY, by the way. And if it wasn't for CUNY, and if it wasn't for my public educational, I mean, yeah, it was a struggle. I mean, it didn't prepare me for the A, being an A student. I was the B student, right? So I was the guy struggling. I'll admit to it. I struggled, you know. But that's part of life. You have to struggle in life. I didn't quit. Right? I'm not a quitter. And imagine that I told you I went from the Bronx through Manhattan to Brooklyn as a 14-year-old, 15-year-old, 16-year-old, 17-year-old just to get to high school. Mm-hmm. Three boroughs, waking up at like 5 in the morning, 5:45, getting on the train by 6 to be all the way in Brooklyn and then come back home. You know, that says it all. I'm never going to quit, and I'm in this to win it. I'm going to go all the way to the end, because if I win, you win. If I win, we win. We're all in this together. And one of my mantras or models in life, mottos, has always been, I'm on my way, right? And I think we all say that, right? I think we all say, hey, honey, I just got out of work. I'm on my way. Hey, what's going on? I'm on my way to work. Hey, what's happening? I'm on my way to the hospital. Hey, I'm on my way to church. I am on my way to winning, because New York City voters are going to help me get there, because we are on our way together. We're going to make history, because when I get elected, I'll be the first person of Hispanic descent and happens to be a Caribbean born, somebody who understands the office. And so not just because I'm a Latino and I'm from the Caribbean, but because I'm the most qualified, most experienced individual. That says it all, you know. And that's why I'm going to win, because taxpayers are going to realize this guy's going to protect my dollars, right? And so when I implement my monetary applications portal, they're going to say, holy moly, he knows what he's doing. And, you know, this is the first place where I mention it, actually, although I've been calling it a transparency portal. I have an application portal that I think people are going to love, because they're going to be able to see where the cost savings are, how the money is being spent, what has been allocated to certain agencies that provide, you know, healthcare, mental support to individuals, educational support, right? More learning applications that are accessible via tools, electronic tools, and people could see how the money is being applied, where the taxpayer dollars are going.
Wow. No, I think, you know, you raised some really, really important points. And, you know, we like to say, oh, this is New York City. This is America, but this is New York City. And if you want to run for office, you can run for office. New York City has the only matching fund system in the nation. So this is to make it easier for people to run for office. But actually what it does is it creates obstacles for people to run for office and get the equal exposure time. And that is really quite unfortunate. Yes. And because of that, you know, candidates who actually have what I call the receipts, the professional receipts, the experience for these positions are overlooked.
Yes.
But, you know, how we remedy that as New Yorkers, as communities is, you know, we have platforms and ethnic community local outlets such as Little African News and many, many others out there for so many different communities and ethnic groups that have a chance to highlight and inform and educate New Yorkers and voters about who all is running for office.
Yes. And I could give you an example. So recently there was a, you know, a debate, a public forum. It was sponsored by New York Law School and the Citizens Budget Commission. So I was excited because I thought that I was going to be able to make it. And I was at the time, shy of the $125,000. In fact, it's very hard to raise $125,000 from New York City residents. And, you know, not everyone has it like that, that they can just give you their money. And the individuals who were on the platform are individuals that don't have any controller experience. And I'm not going to discredit their experience in their careers as public officials and what they've done to help others and through their agency support or their governmental liaison role as elected officials, right? So, because I've done it too. I have 27 years of being a liaison to the community at large, having worked with all these individuals at the highest level. Mm-hmm. But here we are, like literally days away from making it to the ballot, and I made my pitch. I see it like a poll tax. I got the email from the border campaign finance board that their publicly sponsored debates will exclude individuals who did not meet or qualify for matching funds. We're on the ballot. Why would you? There's only four candidates running for controller, and we're on the ballot. So you're telling us that the New York City publicly financed debates are going to exclude individuals that are on the ballot because they didn't qualify for matching funds. Wait, let me tell you something about how they qualify for matching funds. Very simple. If they already had a committee and their committees started with, you know, $120,000 or $115,000 or maybe $90,000, and all they did was switch office sort. So instead of running for re-election as borough president, you run for controller, and now you're bringing in that war chest that you had for your re-election effort. And by the way, it goes all the way back to when you first started fundraising, right? So there's like a loophole in the campaign finance platform that allows individuals who are switching office to bring in everything that they raised or the contributions that they raised for the office that they were seeking previously. So if you have an individual that was running for city council and all they have to do is do office, switch office sort, any money that was already expensed from, I think, 2021, so money that was expensed, gone. It's not even there since 2021, and you're switching off his sort in the filing. You might be able to claim some of that as money that is matchable in the current filing. So there's a loophole in the process in the system. It's very difficult for individuals like myself who are starting from scratch, let's say, but your platform and other people's platforms. I was told by a very close advisor yesterday that not to sweat it. Don't worry about the money and don't worry about the debates. And that's what I guess, you know, there's going to be two guys, you know, I guess playing nice in the sandbox when I'm going to be on the street talking to voters, you know? And so this is where it's going to matter. And this election is going to matter by word of mouth, spreading the news that there's other candidates that are minority candidates running for this office, that although we haven't qualified for matching funds, we're going to need donations, whether it's $10, $20, $30, so we can pay for what they call palm cards and reduce, you know, mini commercials on platforms like yours or platforms like YouTube or Instagram and, you know, conduct media buys and things of that nature. We're going to have to be very strategic about how we inform the voters that one of their own is actually running for office.
Yeah, the campaign finance system definitely needs to be reformed. Mm-hmm. And we need to ensure that it truly is equitable.
Yes.
That it's not, you know, it's not a roadblock for candidates. And mm-hmm. to be honest with you, it really doesn't make sense. If you are on the ballot, you should be in the debates. Full stop. The campaign finance board matching system should not be a gatekeeper. It should not be the poll tax. So it's something that needs to be revisited. 100%. And you know, I don't know if it's something that needs to be changed in the city charter, or if it's just something that can be changed on a more, lower level or with the regulations. I don't know when it comes to the governance of that office.
I you know, that's something that we should look into. They should be audited. When I become the controller, I will audit that criteria.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It really, really should be, because it's like, oh, you know, we have campaign finance system, so anybody can run. But hello, your campaign finance system also disenfranchises mm-hmm. all of these New Yorkers or candidates that you say you want to run.
Exactly.
It doesn't make sense. It doesn't compute. But again, that's why, whether it's Little African News, community-based organizations such as One City Rising, Asian Wave Alliance, you know, this is why many of us have come together to have online virtual forums, because people work, people have lives. Not everybody can go to a comptroller candidates forum in the morning at New York Law School.
Right. You and know? I haven't been prepped for a debate or none of that. They have the money to pay for debate prep. They have the money to have individuals tell them what to say and teach them how to lift other people's bullet points and things of that nature. They're gonna go online and they're gonna utilize all these catchphrases, you know, like the chief fiscal watchdog, but they don't really know what it means to be that, right? They're calling themselves the bulldog and this and that. I mean, what does that mean, right? They don't know what it means, right? So you're gonna go in there, and day one, you're gonna have a massive learning curve. And day one, for me, I already know how it works. So when I get elected, I already bring a team of individuals, highly experienced individuals that are going to come in with me, and or I will keep a lot of the folks that I know are doing a great job over there, right? Mm-hmm. And so one of the things I want to do for the taxpayer is to make sure that I help become the best controller that New York City has ever had. I want to be there for 8 years. You know, I want to commit to that. And at the end of the day, that's why I'm running, because I think it's a career dream job. But besides that, it's an opportunity for the taxpayer. It's an opportunity for the taxpayer to see that they're going to get somebody. There's going to be no nonsense when it comes to like auditing agencies to eliminate any waste. And I'm going to identify, because I kind of know where it is, right? I know where it is because I've been on the operation side, right? I've worked for a agency that supports all the agencies. Mm-hmm. And I have a network of individuals in every agency, right? So that says it all, you know, between my contacts and all the agencies, people that tell me this needs to be overlooked, this needs to be seen, you need to look into this, you need to look into that. There's not a day that goes by that somebody calls me and says, if I become a whistleblower, can you protect me? Or that somebody says, you know, because look, I'm telling you right now, that if anything, I'm going to create a portal where individuals are going to be able to report stuff to me, and they're going to be protected, and they're going to be defended if they need to be defended, because the city's whistleblower law doesn't even protect the whistleblower. It throws them under the bus. We've seen it over the years. So I'm somebody that's going to make sure that, you know, how NYPD has, you know, the crime task force, and they have somebody that you call to report crime, and they defend you. They don't drop a dime on you, right? They allow you to say what needs to be said so that we can look into it. That's going to be me. Every agency needs to be audited at least once every 4 years, and I plan to. It's the controller's responsibility to do so. I'm also going to defend, as it relates to the African diaspora, the prevailing wage and the New York working living wage. So these are wages that are set on scales, and anybody that breaks the law, I'm going to come after them. So I'm going to it doesn't matter where you are. So if it's a prevailing wage issue, you could be in your country, and if you report it and we look into it and we find fraud, or we see that a business owner underscored and underpaid a laborer or worker when they were supposed to be getting paid according to a scale, a prevailing wage according to the scale for whatever role it was, they get paid. They could be in any country, but we will send them the check. So that's something that I'm going to be sure to defend the prevailing wage and the living wage, because I know how it works, right? So I've helped people. And I'm going to make sure that the Comptroller's Community Affairs Unit is beefed up so that we can respond to things a lot faster. It used to be that the Comptroller's Office used to have press releases that kind of like made sense. Now the Comptroller's Office has press releases, and they talk about their analysis, and then it gets kind of like swept under the rug for stuff. Like during COVID, certain people got slapped on the wrist. I mean, come on. We saw that there was stuff that was purchased that made no sense. People need to look into these things. And this is part of the reason why when I become the controller, I'm going to look into a lot of stuff. And if there's any investigations that are going on, I'm going to be the guy that's going to be there with a team of individuals that I want to know what's happening. And I want to know where the money went and how was it spent, expensed, spent. Is there more? Can we claw back some of that money? Make sure that we assign it. So if I identify waste on one end, then it should be redirected to areas like, let's say, after school programs with the Board of Education, things like that, that make sense, right? People are talking about planting trees everywhere. Is that helping us? I don't know that it is or it isn't. Where are they planting these trees, right? Who's getting paid for this? Things like that I'm going to be looking into. Who did the analysis? Is the city being hurt from all these bike lanes that are going up all over the place? And they're eliminating, you know, parking on one whole side of the street?
Mm-hmm.
Those cars need to go somewhere, right? Of course they're talking about congestion pricing. First of all, everything's congested because you eliminated half the lanes across New York City. So now you created all these bike lanes, and you created like one lane that goes this way and one lane that goes that way. And so you can't even stop to drop somebody off without taking a chance of getting hit by a bike or yep. by a scooter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, things like this, senior support, things like that. Seniors need more support. Our mental health crisis that's going on. The police need more support. They need to keep us safe. There's a lot going on in this country. Just because they closed the borders, that doesn't mean that the migrants that came in, you know, first of all, I don't believe that all of them are bad. Remember, my family migrated from Puerto Rico, right? So I'll be the first to admit that, and I'm not talking bad about anybody here, by the way. That, you know, even my own family, we've had, you know, one bad apple, right? Or two, right? Everyone in across, just human nature, it just happens. So we have to give everybody a fair chance, a fair shot, and we have to give them the support services. But on whose dime? So we're talking about building affordable housing. Look, migrants were put in hotels that were five-star hotels, right? Who thought about that? I mean, people came to this country from Africa and they learned how to navigate and they learned how to utilize the system to become legal and to become, you know, to get their work visa, whatever it took to get it, right? To do it legitimately, right? So they came to study and for whatever reasons, they love it here. And then they say, you know what? I would love to live here. I can help my family out. I want to get a stay. I want my visa. I want to convert. I want to go from being an F1 student visa, go back home, come back, and you know, become somebody that wants to live here, and or get, you know, do residency. You have to do it the way it's supposed to work according to the law. So here we are. We have people that are coming like this overnight, being put in a hotel. What about the people that came before that? That are still trying to figure it out. You're allowing other individuals just to skip the line, mm-hmm. and throw everybody off, right? And I did start off by saying that the blood that unites us is thicker than the water or the land that divides us. And I love my migrant community. You know, I have friends, you know, in my neighborhood that I talk to, that I go and I buy coffee at their place, that I chat with at the park, that are the parents of some of my friends, right? That are supporters of mine, and thank you for supporting me with whatever you could from different countries, including individuals that come from Africa that are my friends and supporters, and from the Caribbean and different parts of the world. And we're all one. It's just a matter of working together to sort of like help each other out. And the network and the ability to tell individuals, if you go here, you're going to get support. If you go there, you're going to get legal advice. If you speak to these individuals, they will help you out with immigration law. If you send your mother or take your mother here, you can enroll her for more senior support. This is what it's all about. This is where my transparency portal is going to come into play for all of the agencies, because every agency is working in silos. They're all, you go to one agency, they send you to another one. You have to start from scratch all over again. There's not like a ticket system like you talked about, right? Mm-hmm. I have the ticket. I understand. I have the understanding to get elected. But then you get somebody elected, they're going to put us back 2-3 years on their learning curve. And then by the time they catch up, it's too late. We're finding out now how, you know, the city controller's office lost billions of dollars from making misinformed decisions on our money pension. So even though it looks like it performed well because Wall Street did well, so the system looks like it did well, we lost billions of dollars from certain decisions that were made based on political ideology. So somebody wants to divest from Tesla, or somebody wants to divest from fossil fuels, or somebody says, let's defund the police. These things affect every New Yorker in one way, form, or another. Mm-hmm. We can't do that to pensioners. We can't play with people's budget money. It's the city's money. It's not a political person's call to say, oh, I like all green, so I want to go all green. By the way, I worked in DCAS, and I worked with the engineers implementing all sorts of green initiatives to help New York City, right, reduce its carbon footprint. I became a certified building operator, and I worked with the best in class engineers, mechanics, and oilers, you name it. I learned about what works for them before I made a pitch about something. So as it relates to building efficiencies inside government, I'm that guy, because I'm the individual that's going to get roll up the sleeves and go into the basement and find out if whether or not it makes sense to go to dig for thermal fuel, right? That's you know, this is where we are in New York City. You need to learn before you try to do something. And so I'm sure that before running for this office, a lot of these individuals are trying to read up about it, but I already know how it works.
Okay. Well, definitely no one can compete with you when it comes to experience with the Comptroller's Office. So, Ismail, I just want to thank you for taking the time out to join us today. I'm really looking forward to Wednesday's Candidates Forum, Wednesday's Comptroller's Candidates Forum. Thank you for confirming and joining us. We're expecting the other candidates as well to be there, Kevin Parker, Justin Brennan, and Mark Levine. And you know, we're going to have some real talk about you know, how everyone plans on improving that office, how everyone plans on, you know, protecting New Yorkers' tax dollars, protecting our pensions, ensuring that there is transparency when it comes to contracting, when it comes to the New York City checkbook.
Yes. Because
we need to know these things. And also, I really want to hear where all of the candidates stand when it comes to using that office as political football and virtue signaling, because it shouldn't. It should be about protecting the taxpayers, yes, making sure the money is spent wisely, and making sure that there's return on investments.
Yes.
Not shooting ourselves in the foot, you know, with divesting from certain companies or certain companies in certain countries because it fits with whatever political ideology. No, it should be about dollars and cents and returns.
That's all about dollars and cents. And I really appreciate the Little African News for having me. I look forward to, you know, the forum. I'm not going to come in there with any like big, bright ideas. We're going to hear everybody pitch an idea. But look, it's all about transparency, period. Everybody needs to know. You open the books and that's where you know what's happening. And so let's show New Yorkers where the money's going. Let's make it, you know, with today's advent of technology, you should be able to just log in and see where everything is, right? Mm-hmm. You have to go and kind of dig through it all and do all kinds of research and try to find it. So, you know, the Little Africa News Network is really providing a serious service, excuse me, to New Yorkers, because they're going to get a chance to hear myself, the other candidates, and get a chance to pick who's the best one, who they think is going to be the best person to do the job, not based on our race, but based on expertise, the experience, and our ability to do the job. So I'm going to be able to get it done because I don't belong to anybody, right? So I'm an independent Democrat, a moderate in the middle, to kind of like, I know we talked a lot and I try to squeeze it all in. I'm sorry, it might have sounded like I was going on and on and on and on. I'm trying to squeeze as much information in as possible for your listeners because it's the only way to get it in. You know, we don't have a lot of time, so they could come back and watch it again. I'm sure my opponents are going to come back and hear me out, right? Because that's what they do. Mm-hmm. Take some of what I said and turn it into their own talking points, because why not? I'm the most experienced candidate, right? So they're going to have the platform. They're going to be on the stage, on the debate stage, and unfortunately, I don't think I'm going to be able to raise $80,000 in 22 days. So shame on the system that is kind of leaving out the most experienced or the most qualified candidates. You got like myself and Kevin Parker, a senator who worked for a comptroller who is running for the spot, and he's not being allowed to the debate stage unless he raised the money, and I don't know about it. I don't think I'm going to be able to make $80,000. It would require 320 people to give $250 to raise $80,000, because it has to be $250 from a New York City resident, and it has to be 320 residents to get $250. Now, they could give $10 if they want, so I can get some pop cards, but, you know, as it relates to my vision for the controller's office, it's very plain and simple. It's going to be a transparency agency. It's going to do its best, the best job to protect taxpayer dollars, to manage the five pension systems ethically, and to make sure that I don't play politics. It's not going to be a political football ball. It's going to be based on common sense and fiduciary role, a fiduciary responsibility. The controller needs to be a fiduciary, point blank. It's built on city worker capacity. So I'm going to beef it up, and I'm going to make sure that our city audit agency has the best, you know, staff members. I'm going to defend the living wage and the prevailing wage, and I'm going to champion financial literacy for all New Yorkers so people learn how to manage money so we can come out of poverty. Like I learned how to manage money from studying economics. And today I own my own house, right? And because I learned how to save a dollar. And so people, I just pray to God that people learn how to manage a little bit of money so they don't, you know, overextend themselves with credit or back credit or get back credit and learn how to save so they can invest in property or in other things that can help them get to the next level in life. Thank you so much, Mona, for having me here. I know we're coming up on an hour of an interview. It's been an amazing hour, and every moment for me is going to be a moment that I'm going to cherish as I move forward in this my political aspirations to become the next New York City controller.
No, well, thank you for joining us here at Little African News, and I'm looking forward to Wednesday's candidates forum. Wednesday, April 30th, it will be live streamed on our Facebook and X accounts. And there's also a link for people to log in and watch it on StreamYard. So Ismail, thank you again for joining us here, and I will see you on Wednesday.
I look forward to coming back.
Thank you.
Take care. God bless everybody.